drag. It makes me feel so doggone blue to listen to that old smokestack. Drivers are rolling on, leaving me here behind. Give me back them good old days and let me ramble down the line. That lonesome train, I love to hear the whistle blow. She's taking the sun and leaving the rain and making me want to go. I've got the blues, longing for her company. Many miles from where I am to the only one for me. It's so lonesome here, waiting for the manifest. I hope that engineer is kind enough to let me be his guest.
Dave Monk, your Prairie Monk, WAFT Champagne 90.1 on your FM dial.
And Dave on the board. This is Sunday, May the 13th, 2018, and this is the Prairie Monk Show, WAFT's weekly look at rails, trails, greenways, and many of the area communities, which we're certainly involved with, and graduation, it looks like.
Yes, with graduation. We congratulate people, but it's also a time when we watch the bins and dumpster dive, because people tend to throw out an awful lot of recyclable materials. And so I'll talk about that a little later, but I have just a couple boxes of coat hangers. There's a pound of steel there. This is plastic, and often these pieces, these things that come with shirts that are, and clothing that is recyclable. If not recyclable, it can be mailed and used again. And the Y does a good job. They line up a bunch of semi-trailers and put furniture and all sorts of things in there, so students can get them back when they come back in the fall. So we want to remind you to, as you're clearing out, please to recycle what you can. One of the problems is that people want to leave town quickly after graduation, and so they just band their apartment very quickly, and they don't exactly know where to put it, where to go. So it goes into the dumpster, and I don't think we have deserve to have that sort of a material in the landfill. So that's my rant on graduation at the moment. It's otherwise a very healthy experience, and we need to applaud it.
But we need to get them out of here too, because we've got 20,000+ coming in the fall, so we can't have the other ones left over hanging around.
There's a lot of students. We have an in passing this week. Stephen Smith passed on. He was the owner of the Piano People. He grew up in New York and he got a degree in chemistry at Northwestern University, but he followed his girlfriend down to Champaign, got involved with music. He played a keyboard and went into the web record swap, which doesn't exist anymore. And he saw a notice for a group called Ginger that wanted a keyboard player, and he joined them. And then later he belonged to Tons of Fun, and he was a very good and successful keyboard player and was well known in the community. He had salvaged something like 340 Steinways and quality pianos, including one that came from the Lincoln home. He married Tricia, and they have a daughter, Alex, and it's it was just so many people that knew each other. And so sometimes memorial services are getting together of people who have known each other for years but haven't met with each other in recent times. Some of Stephen's employees have been with him for 34 years. So Alfred gave a nice speech from the employee's point of view, which is a very cooperative organization. And Stephen was very broad-based person, and so he knew all sorts of people who bought pianos and stored pianos with him. I actually was talking to him, couldn't have been much more than a week ago, right outside where Rubel's Pogo studio was, just on the street outside West, and we were talking for quite some time in an excited manner. He fell to cancer, which caught up with him fairly quickly. And so it was kind of a surprise to us. He was a person interested in Civil War activities. And if anyone is interested in going to a memorial, he would go to a Civil War trust in Hagerstown. So he was an eclectic soul. We went up at Rantoul again. Ron Slater came through from the Decatur, and we took the new Lincoln Avenue over Olympian Drive and up through the back road paralleling Canadian National. It's we go through Leverett. Leverett used to be a little town, but it's sort of retired from that. One of the key buildings fell down recently, and it's now a center for herbicide and fertilizer and stuff like that. So it's still active, and there's still a big elevator there, but it's not a little town community anymore. But all along the railroad there, as long as it's not used for agriculture, is good prairie. Yes, nice little pieces here and there. So we come out onto this 45 at Thomasboro and the prairie in front of some of the Department of Transportation plantings is well labeled with prairie preservation, and it's also well known around because the local people who live there are much more oriented to a mown establishment. And I noticed to the south of Thomasboro, where there has been a really nice clump of cordgrass. It's now planted to little evergreen trees, and that sort of disappoints me. That the cordgrass was growing on the old interurban. So we got to Rantoul, 1 mile north, and you go around the Maplewood Cemetery, and we park on the section road, which is 320. And there's an old road that goes through behind there, and it continues north, and so there's good parking. We have been working with the Department of Transportation, has put up two big road closed signs and concrete barriers so that people do not dump on that corridor. So we figure that it's better to live with it. We have enough problems with people dumping things, often small contractors who do not want to pay the price of dumping things in the landfill. And so we take wheels with us and waddle our water that's needed for the herbiciding of invasive teasel plants. And we're having probably a six-year battle with teasel, and it will continue. But the main prairie, which is fairly hard and not really accepting of the teasel, is doing quite well. The starry-eyed grass was out in flower, so were the strawberries, and so was the golden Alexander. And we are looking at putting signs on the roadside so that we can put a grid across the prairie so people can find their way around it and do a little research with it. There's a nice little stream that comes down through the corridor. Disappears in some places and is abraded in others. That means it has several different streams, and then eventually finds its way into a drainage ditch. Some of that water comes off the Bloomington Moraine and is encouraged to do so, because sometimes on the top of a moraine you have some low spots that block drainage. So this creek is part taking water off of the glacial moraine and dropping it into a large drainage ditch, which is on the south side of where our prairie is. I was very pleased to go to the interurban area where there's remnant prairie. And there was Horik Vakoon, which is a good indication that it's fairly native prairie. Also put in signs to try and keep the four-wheelers at bay. And some explanatory notes just to let them know why we would like them to keep off this rather unique plot. It's a gravel pit that's lost 8 feet of gravel, so it's gradually coming back into the species, and we're trying very hard to keep the species about the same as what is on the railroad line nearby. And so after I'd put in the signs and Ron was continuing to spot herbicide, I looked at the interurban and was very pleased. There were some trees that we've tried to get rid of, and even they are being used by nesting birds. So I have a photograph of three eggs in a nest, and I try not to disturb those such, but basically we need volunteers to help us to remove some of the invasive trees that are shading out that prairie. Mm-hmm. The more we remove the trees, the more the prairie comes to express itself. And we have two little bridges. You have to know that the cross-section here is main line, if we're going from west to east, main line, and then interurban. And each line has its own ditch. And so David has helped me and other students to put in two little bridges on either side of the interurban. So I walked across them last year, week and was pleased to do that. It just saves you from getting into a muddy site. But we do use Wellington boots because apart from the fact that you're walking in water sometimes, you also have to deal with the occasional tick, and boots, they don't manage to grab onto boots that are up to your knees. So we were both wearing Wellington boots, although they're not the easiest to walk with. And Ron is being cautious because he's recently had a hip replacement, but he's doing well. He did 2 hours a week or so ago, and then he did 4 hours yesterday. Wow. And that's carrying a sprayer with a couple of gallons of water, and that takes some exercise. And really we could do with some people who could help do that sort of work. We are having to constantly work with the teasel because it has millions of seeds and it spreads very easily. It's mostly on areas that have been disturbed, so where you have bicycle activities, motorcycle activities, pickup truck activities, then that's where the teasel will take over. It's also where some of the area has been used for farmland, and that's soft soil, and that can encourage teasel. And it has a huge rosette, and it can cover up your more natural plants. We'd like to think that someday the horticultural people, the floral people, would think more carefully about using that plant as a dried arrangement. It is a rather wonderful looking pod. It's sort of spiny. You used to use it to tease wool and to spin wool, and that gives it some history, but wow, is it invasive. We did look again at some of the areas around the cemetery, and we figured that it would be possible to buy and reconstruct some of those farmed areas that weren't part of the burrow pit or the gravel pit that removed a lot of the topsoil and left us with morainic material, which was like when you had a moraine dam. I came back from that and I feel obliged to be looking at some of our territories just to make sure they're doing okay and that if they're doing interesting things that we may know about it. So I'm going to list a few of those things. One is Busey Woods, and I walked around Busey Woods and was pleased to see the birds there. In one corner there was Cooper's hawks, and there was quite a little family of them, and in the tops of the trees. And if I get a chance, I'll go out there with a camera and take a record of them. But I used to do a lot of work in Busey Woods. I was working with Dr. Kendi, who's ornithologist, and did a lot to establish an Audubon Society here. And I was aware that on Sunday at 7:30, there's Audubon visitation to the area, not only Busey Woods, but around Crystal Lake Park, where the Park District has left some of the berms unmown, and some of them grow honeysuckle and invasive plants that we don't necessarily want but they also attract the warblers and the birds that come through and use that as a rookery. It hasn't always been the only place where there's a rookery, but there was a huge rookery over on Cunningham Avenue, but it went to development, and so that sent a lot of the migrating birds to Busey Woods. And it's about 50 or 60 acres, but it's alive with creatures at the present time. And so on Sunday morning, this morning, just a few hours ago, I joined the 7:30 bird walk, and there were no less 30 people there, and all with binoculars. But if those that didn't have binoculars were loaned binoculars, and they met outside the Nita Purvis Center. Nita Purvis Center is a natural history center. It was established in the 60s. Anita Purvis was part of an UPDIC advisory group to the Banner Park District, and she did a lot of work with mussels in the creek. As the Boneyard comes down from the north and goes through Havana and out to the Salt Fork and down to the Vermilion and then to the Wabash and out to Ohio and into the Mississippi, that was an attractive area. It was wetland. There was a big meander loop, and the wisdom of the day was that we needed to get water off Champaign County, which was very wet. So you took those meanders and you cut through them to channelize the river. And so the creek that comes down through the north and through the country club and through Crystal Lake Park has been heavily channelized. That leaves a meander that is called a vernal pond. It grows green in the spring. That might be due to various lichens or algae. But if you go there early in the spring, you'll get water fleas and all sorts of creatures in these ponds. So there are trails that go around the ponds, and the area was destined to be a dumping area. So there are hills in the Busey Woods which are actually dumps of bricks or cars or what have you. So Busey Woods is not necessarily totally pristine, but there's enough of the nature there that it has a bit of both. And the mixture actually provides different habitats for different creatures. There are meander scars where the river used to meander in one place and then found another place to break through. And so the physiography of that land is interesting. The cutoff or the channelization created two levees. They usually use a pontoon with a drag line on it, and you go downstream on your own pond that you create. So you grabs amount of material and makes a levee. And so in Busey Woods, you can walk along the levee and see the ducks and creatures in the channel. So I forgot to get the name of the guy who was leading, but he is an Audubon board member, and a number of people from the board, Audubon board was there, and Beth Chato especially is a renowned specialist in bird counts and bird lists, and is well traveled worldwide, and I hope to have her and Helen Parker, two people who are knowledgeable about this site, on a future program. I want to say that these are the sorts of people who create the like of the Anita Purvis Center. So I took some photographs of the Anita Purvis Center. Anita Purvis died at a young age, probably in her late 30s, from breast cancer. And the name was there. And Anita had done a lot of research, especially with mussels and creatures in those vernal ponds. And I can remember the day when there was a nice big tree outside the original Anita Purvis Center. But then it was popular to the extent that I think they put about $1 million into that area. And they've recently created a children's area where children can play and crawl through rocks and rubble and stand on things and enjoy themselves. We set forth from the parking lot, and we went towards Crystal Lake rather than to Busey Woods. And most of the people there were knowledgeable Audubon people. So they go by sound. Does this bird have a cheep, 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 chirp, chirp, chirp? And there are guides. One comes from Cornell, where you can actually get a diagram of that sound. And so you don't exactly see a bird sitting out in front of you, available for viewing. You have to watch with your naked eye to see where the birds are flying. Some of them fly in tremendously different manner. So people who know their onions about birds are able to follow that, and then they find where the bird has lit. And then they're very good at telling you what tree and what branch. And oh, it just moved, and it's gone to and so birders who know each other are dependent on each other for seeing a lot of warblers coming through. If you don't down low, you have thrushes that are low on the ground. You have some birds that are high. You deserve to have good binoculars because you need to see whether they have a yellow breast or a red wings or whatever it is. Orioles, some birds are quite colorful. I attempted to take some recordings of the sound because that's how Audubon people know about where the birds are. And so then they go looking in that tree or on that power line or wherever they are. It might be a catbird or in behind that there's a constant sound of Canadian geese, which are not so popular with everybody because they are very, very well known, and they do make a mess of parks. They do have a beaver pond, so there's some creatures like herons that like to sit near that site. There are turtles. So you've got water and you've got shrubbery and trees and vacant space around. So Busey Woods is surrounded by a country club, county fairground, and a huge cemetery. And all that becomes a adjunct space for birds. And so they come back and roost in the woods and fly out. And it's amazing. Some of them fly very high. Some of them like barn swallows nest underneath bridges, but they fly out. They sometimes fly out in pairs and then come back. And you, if you're watching them with your binoculars, you have a hard time keeping up with them. I think that's probably enough. The Nita Purva Center has a number of owls that have had injuries so that they have one eye and they're not very able to fend for themselves and seek food and hunt. So they're there on display, and you can check with the owls. They have snakes, and they have photography. And often photography is wonderful because the photographer is often honing in on something that you will never really see, like a forest of Dorsonia, little mosses that have interesting seed pods, or and just you almost look at something that's an inch high as something that might be 30 feet high. And so just to have a corridor of photographs that you can see a fairy shrimp or a crawdad that you would never see just by your own self, it's there. And there's a quilt that's put together by the Grand Prairie Friends that reminds you of the various animals that you may not see and the plants. So let's leave Meadowbrook Park, but one of these times I'll have some of the Audubon people to be giving us an idea of how did it come to be a Busey Woods. It was part of a 10 square mile big grove. The family was interested in it as a high-priced housing area. That didn't work, so they started to use it as a landfill with the view that it could be an industrial site. And there was a lot of community involvement from people like the people who were at this morning's birthing. They went to the university, and eventually the area was donated to the university, and then eventually the park district bought the land, and with some interesting exchange with the university, and I'm not party to all the details there, but a lot of work went on to try and preserve this area with its trees and its open space and its wetlands.
Before you move on from this, we might let people know, first of all, it's about half past. You're tuned to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM, and this is the Prairie Monk program. But if people go online to YouTube, you've got 170 videos at this point online if you simply look for The Prairie Monk. Most of those are videos of this program, so if you have ever missed listening to Dave's program, you can catch up on any of them, and most of them have little titles that tell you something about what was in the program. But Dave has also done some extra slideshows and things like that that are independent of the show itself, and I'm pretty sure if you go and type in Prairie Monk Busey Woods, B-U-S-E-Y Woods, you'll find one of the videos. It was a wintertime, as I recall, slideshow that you put together that shows you one season's worth of what you would see as you go around through Busey Woods, again on YouTube.com.
And the Prairie State Conservation Coalition, which is doing this sort of work, is encouraging people to look at those sorts of videos or slideshows, just so that you need, you can actually go to a Busey Woods for 1,000 times and you'll see it differently. You'll see it high, you'll see it low, you'll see it wet and foggy and windy, and you'll find an individual creature. You'll find in those meander scars, you'll find creatures like lizards, and I'm forgetting their names, but
salamanders
that are in that wetland, and There's an interesting trail that goes through a wetland and follows some of those meanders. So we encourage you to be active. I have a brochure here that's rather nice. It says up and down and around for Busey Woods, and the headings are you have, first of all, have to be sensitive. You don't go off and make your own trail, for instance. You keep on the trail. You have addresses. You get to know where to find the bumblebee and where you find the cowbird or the red-winged blackbird or the thrush. And they all have home addresses. They're not like the addresses that we know, but you find them and their habitat. And you can play a role. You can record this, and like the gentleman who was leading the effort this morning, he doesn't know all the birds that could be there. And for Ray Bomer's memorial just a week or two ago, they counted 37 species on one 2-hour event in Busey Woods. And sometimes you get up to 150 different species of birds, and you have to know where they are, where they set up their territories. And you have to know the pond life and figure out what you can find. And then contribute something to this sort of thing that allows people to enjoy and enjoy. I have to remind you that this is a Sunday morning event between March and May, March 3rd to May 27th, and it's from 7:30 to 9 a.m. And it's a fun place to be and do interesting things. So think about going there. It's right now. It's where you have migration, and you can help with spring bird counts. And people like Beth Chato and Helen Parker, who've been Audubon people for a long time, have helped to put together a little sales place where you can buy books about nature, and some of them for adults, some of them for children. There are finger puppets. I've had my sister here, and one of the places that I took her and her husband to was to Busey Woods, and she bought a bunch finger puppets. They're little animals. You put your finger in and you can have a mouse that runs around. And she took them back for her grandchildren. And all in all, I'm very supportive of that situation. Champaign is trying to do some of the same things. They don't have a Busey Woods, and it would take 200 years to do that. But we have often suggested that there could be such a forest and prairie on the west side of Champaign. And so your efforts in Urbana might be efforts in another situation. I had just was working outside, and two people came by, and they started to ask questions. It was Andy and Terry Wilkie, and so we got talking, and then they asked me if I'd like to join them with a beer, and I said yes, and we had an exchange, which was rather nice. So these things help. So just that interaction is important. So I want to tell you about a few other places that are round about. I went to Meadowbrook Park, and it's a farmland that has been replanted to prairie. That means that the prairie is a little more a little less sophisticated than a remnant prairie, but it is a nice walk, and the prairie has gradually gotten more sophisticated as people realize that prairie wasn't just the grasses, it was also the broadleaves. And Audubon, again, has been responsible for picking seed and increasing the biological range in Meadowbrook Park. Opposite the university has some forested area, and they're not unrelated. And there's a little stream that runs through there. It ran off the Yankee Ridge Moraine and went down and joined up with the Ombra. And that's another story that you can follow. And down to Walnut Pond in Coles County, I think it is. But down there near on the Yankee Ridge, just a little way north of, or south of Meadowbrook Park, is Barnhart Prairie. If you go down Ray Street, you will see the Barnhart Prairie on Church Street, Savoy. So the intersection of Vine or Race and Church Street, Savoy, will give you an introduction to planted prairie. The Barnhart family has done a lot to get 100 acres of prairie. And if you want to see what a prairie is like at this time of the year, go there. They have mown an interesting walkway. It is loaded with prairie plants because they didn't plant for a trail. They planted an acreage of prairie. And so the prairie is coming up, and the trail is about the width of a bush hog. And I would like to say the trail could be the size of a lawnmower, say 2 feet wide, and all the plants that would otherwise be mown with the bush hog could express themselves. And sometimes you would think of creating a different trail in a different part of the prairie, so you wouldn't be destroying the one part of the prairie all the time. But the family has also put up, and they've been working with soil conservation and other agencies, including the university, to put in a parking lot and a place where you can picnic if you want to. And there are signs to say what this is, a black-eyed Susan or Monada or prairie clover or what have you. It's not enough to create a signed jungle, but it's enough to give you some information. And the flowering peak of that plant is photographed and put on a little sign, so that you could, an all-weather sign, so you can see what it is that you're passing by. A lot of people have not seen a prairie for a long, long time, and it's a little bit like birding. You need to know what you're talking about before you can get the subtleties and nuances that go with understanding a prairie. Lake Park has an interesting prairie. The road on Route 45 has a prairie underneath a grid. We worked with the grid people when they were putting in their towers for power lines, and they're happy to have prairie there as long as it doesn't have trees. It's short to the ground. The new towers that are put in are way in the sky, so it's not likely that they'll have shorting to trees, but they make sure that they don't have too many trees and they mow, and that's a costly way of working with the corridor. But the prairie is there, and It has a roadside ditch alongside it, and I see that it's wet. It's the intent was to deepen the ditch so that the water got out, but the water doesn't always get out, and that leaves us with a wetland. So you've got a little range of habitat there. Windsor Road has a prairie. It's near to the fire training school, and on the other side of it, to the south, is a solar event, and which reminds me that the solar people are putting in for. They combine various people's orders so that they can do things in bulk, and they go to your website, and they're working on getting people solar panels for a reasonable price. There are other places that are really quite close. St. Mary's Cemetery is well mown, but if it's in spring and it's not mown yet, I didn't go in there to see, but often if it's not mown early in the spring, there's Ruellia there, and you have Ruellia as a fine expression of prairie in the cemetery. It's a sort of one species prairie, but it indicates that plot of land, if unmown, would probably come back to prairie. On the west side of it is the main line railroad, and that does have some remnant prairie, and the railroad people have mown it recently, and that is helpful because that will allow the prairie that's there to come back. Mowing the invasive trees and invasive plants, sometimes like teasel, is very helpful and pretty constant. The pocket prairie is still in discussion. We've been to the city and talked to the owner of the business that's going to be there, which is Bars, and they're going to use the pocket prairie as a beer garden, but we would hope it will retain some of its rustic nature and retain a few prairie plants. So we're still discussing that, but very shortly will come the time when we have to transfer some of that prairie to probably the big dig on Second Street. In order to do all this, we are in the position of needing volunteers. We've done a lot to sort of stabilize areas, and often we've spun off groups like the Grand Prairie Friends or the Natural Areas Study Group or other agencies that can do what we want to see done better than we can do. In order to do that, we have to have people who are prepared to spend a Saturday or a Sunday a few hours at a time to remove invasive trees, and that's one of the things we can use at the Pope Prairie in Rantoul, but it means you have to go 20 miles to get there, and you have to understand it so that you don't remove species that you might think were shrubs but maybe prairie plants. So you need a little bit of understanding, but there's also evergreen trees, cypress, that have been planted nearby in the cemetery or on the roadside, and they need to be removed because they're not part of the nature. We have the same sort of situation outside of Allerton Park, where we have 4 miles of quite reasonable, fairly undisturbed soil, and we need people who will come. Some of you may bring your own chainsaws. Some of you will be appalled that we spot herbicide the base of the tree, but it's very hard to do different, and just cutting off the tree is not enough. But it means going and doing that. If you're wanting to be interested in the railroading aspects of what we do, Heartland Pathways has given the a right-of-way to the Champaign, Havana, and Western Historic Railroad. And that's been in action for about 5 years. And the intent with that is to rerail 4 miles of our territory between Whiteheath and Seymour and acquire 7 miles of railroad between Seymour and Bonneville and Staley and eventually get historic trains into Champaign. In order to do that, we have to have railroad ties, and we have to put the railroad ties in, and then you have to put plates on the railroad ties, and then you put in the steel, and a stick rail is usually about 33 feet long, and it's heavy, and it needs surprising ways of doing it. You can have a front-end loader and do it that way, or in old times, you had a bunch of tongs, and you lifted, you had railroad songs, and you, if you're going to lift it 6 inches, then you might have 10 people with tongs. Some of them are on the same tong. You lifted that railroad and moved it an inch or whatever it is. So you can, it's surprising that when you get 10 or 12 people on a 30-foot strip of steel that weighs 90-odd pound per yard, it doesn't get to be heavy anymore. You can actually do it. So if you have a foreman with a song and you sing and you lift it at the same time, wow, you get away with murder. You can actually do it with hand people. But these days we do have machinery, but we need people to be able to put the ties down and to tamp the gravel around it. And so if you have a penchant to do that, then you meet up with people like Keller, who's been a person that runs machinery to tamp the rails, and they'll be able to tell you what to do and how to do it. And whether one, if you're going around a bend, one rail must be a little higher than the other. There's vegetation to be removed so that it doesn't get in the way of a train. And so you get hold of Tom Scott, who has a degree in railroad engineering, but he also is, the Scott family has had a lot to do with the creation of the Monticello Railroad Museum, and he drives diesel engines for them and is very knowledgeable of railroad things and has the imagination of getting railroad trains into Champaign, but also into the rest of some of their railroad museum corridors. They have bought 7 miles of railroad bed, and they have a Y at each end. And a Y allows you to turn the engine around and then head back the same way as you came up with the engine in front. And that has some connotations for how you wear the rails, how you wear the engine, and it also gives people an experience of how you work a railroad. So we encourage you to at least go out to the museum and see what they're doing, see their rolling stock, and then see how you might be able to combine a bicycle trail or a walking trail with this. Monticello is loaded with interesting things. We have a lodge park, which at this time of the year you can drive around and almost just look out your window and see wonderful understory plants looking out over the Sangamon River. You can encounter an old mill where you used to have a raceway, and the water would turn the mill and grind the grain or saw the logs. It's a little, probably a mile or two out of Monticello, but it's there, and there's Allerton Park, and there's the Railroad Museum, and just a whole bunch of people that do interesting things. And nestled in there somewhere, I was talking to the foreman who is working on the building across the way, and he has a property in there, and there's a number of properties that have fairly large prairies and enjoy doing that sort of reconstruction every once in a while. And just the other day, I think it might yet to be, Monticello has a bicycle corridor event. It used to go up to almost to Mansfield. A dentist there used to run it, and that was an exciting thing to do. There was a pepsin factory that produced a chemical that was like Pepto-Bismol, an enzyme. And Monticello itself has a city courthouse in the middle of a square that's intact. And that, too, is interesting. So get out and explore. I was pleased today to see some members of the black community in Busey Woods. It hasn't always been easy. It sort of sometimes felt that if the black community is in the woods, it's an untoward activity. So the black community itself gets to be very cautious of being there. And when I go to meetings that are natural history meetings, invariably there's not very many alternate people, whether they're black, blue, or brindle. It's mainly a white Caucasian enclave, which is okay, but it's just nice to see the other members of the society enjoying this sort of situation. And guess what? There was, I was there, and a whole bunch of deer went past me. There are too many deer in Busey Woods, but today there was a little fawn right alongside the trail, and people were enjoying looking at that very much alive animal that mother had left for a while, not suspecting that a bunch of people were going to come by. And there were wee folk, little folk, some of them were very childlike people, child-age people. And if you listen to people like Rachel Carson, one of the things that she would say is, we need to teach young people very early that there's something very exciting about nature. It's a little mysterious, but it's very wonderful. So this has been Dave Monk, your Prairie Monk, WEFT Champaign 90.1 on your FM dial.
And Dave on the board. As always, the views and opinions expressed here are solely those of the speakers and no one else. If you haven't checked the WEFT events calendar lately, you might give us a check on our website. We have information up there about upcoming meetings, fundraisers, and other activities. If you go to weft.org and click on events on the right-hand side of the page, you can be up to date on things like, it's only about 2 weeks, I guess, now before the next associates meeting. Those only happen 4 times a year, so it's a great chance to find out, put faces to the voices that you hear here on WEFT. And with that, it's noon, and time now for Shruti, Music of India, here on WEFT Champaign. We are community radio for East Central Illinois.